Hi, this is Brian Stack from Late Night with Conan O'Brien. Welcome to showbizmonkeys.com. Around this town, I'm all right. Around this town, I'm all right. I mean, no consequence when you playing with the bat. For the amount of success that you've already had in the stand-up world, you're relatively young. How long ago did you get started, and what first got you interested in doing comedy?
I started comedy almost five years ago in Montreal, and I was working as a theater actor. And theater is a really weird creative outlet because you're really at the mercy of a director and a lot of people, and I was looking for something where I could outwardly express all the emotions in my angsty 21-year-old emo heart, and stand-up was the vehicle for it. It was mostly, what it really was I was complaining to my girlfriend at the time that no one was paying me, and she's like, well, I hear that stand-ups get $25 set, and they do that five times in a weekend, and I'm like, that's almost like $250. I could do that. I don't actually think it's $250.
No, I think it's
all right, I'm already embarrassed myself. Listen, math is not my strong suit, all right? You don't get into comedy because you're good at the numbers game. And so I called into the Comedy Works in Montreal, and they put me on, and from, like, the first second I hit the stage, I was like, oh, I want to do this for the rest of my life, because stand-up's great advantages is all based on you. Sort of the whole brunt of the success or failure is based on you and what you accomplish. You don't need a lighting designer, and you don't need to have meetings. You need a phone and hopefully some material, and that's what really appeals to me. And it's why it's I think it's a big Canadian thing, because Canadians are kind of, we do have a lone wolf mentality. That's why I think there's so many good comedians here, is we like to interact, but we also like to be like, I'm going to go wander off into the wilderness, and that's sort of what stand-up kind of is you wander off into the wilderness of weird basement-y bars and nightclubs, and you stand in a microphone by yourself, and your voice is projected into the heads of other people, and you get to express yourself. It's awesome.
So, because you didn't necessarily set out to be a stand-up, did you have an interest in comedy in general when you were growing up?
I did improv in high school. I think it's in Winnipeg. Also, the Canadian Improv Game is where I sort of got my start. It's one of those things where it was right in front of my face that I should have been in comedy from. It was the thing I loved doing. I was always wanting to be the comedic roles in theater school, and I was drawn to stand up. And I grew up watching this. Like, when I was 4 years old, my grandfather sat me down and was like, "These are the Smothers Brothers. These guys are funny." I had no idea what they were talking about, but it was two people that kind of looked the same, speaking quickly. And when you're four, that's all you need for a giggle. And it just went from there.
Do you have any comedy influences, whether it be like stand-ups that you watched a lot when you were just getting started, or people you particularly find funny today?
Well, when I started, Patton Oswalt was a huge influence to me, because he was the first comedian I heard that was, it sounds very cliche, but it was sort of doing jokes that I wanted to do. And then I kind of just sort of stopped listening to stand-up for a while because I was afraid it was going to influence my voice. So it's more and more now. Comedians I work with all the time, Rob Pugh and Pete Zedlacker, who are both on the show with me Friday in Winnipeg, are huge influences. Two amazing comedians, Mike Wilmot, John Doerr. Canada is producing some amazing stand-ups right now. Jeff McHenry, Graham Chittenden, look all these people up. They're doing some amazing work, and it's really cool. It's also becoming the internet age. The comedy is really taking to the internet in a big, bad way, because it allows us to sort of our voices out. So YouTube those people. They're hilarious. Dom Perre is another big influence. He's a very good friend of mine, but he's such an attacky comedian that it's so cool to watch him work.
You mentioned the internet right there. I was going to ask you, you're very internet friendly. You post regular podcasts and video rants.
Yeah, I'm doing a podcast 6 days a week for 6 months because sleep is not something I wanted to do. Here's what I do: is I get an idea, and then I don't think about the idea. I just implement it. So if the idea is, I'm like, I think I could go over Niagara Falls in a barrel, I'll just go get a barrel and then try and jump over Niagara Falls without thinking, oh, I'll probably break my sternum. And the internet's really good because there's no one who will stop you. You're like, I'm going to post a video of me dealing with a heckler, not like thinking that that'll be an influence. Or I'm going to say, I'm going to do a podcast every day and then not think about, well, you're going to actually have to do that every day and stuff like that. So, and I think the internet's the best way because you can call an audience. You can get people looking in your direction, or it'll teach you a different skill. Like, I never thought I'd have to learn how to sound edit. It's something I've had to figure out how to do. I just think the internet's, it's sort of where the future is. It's giving power back to creative people, which is so important because for so long, comedians were at the mercy of people with money or technology or other skills, but now there's software that so user-friendly, and there's people just wanting to connect. Twitter is another weird thing that I never thought I would actually be like really on board with, because it's like me and Ashton Kutcher have a similar philosophy, which I usually live my life just being, what's Ashton doing? He's wearing a trucker hat and dating a 75-year-old? Okay, I'm going to go and get a fedora and not go near an old folks home. It's a return to sort of old school show business where you go to a town and they remember your name and then you come back, and I think that's good for everybody.
Now, the galas at the Winnipeg Comedy Festival are always themed. Do you think it's weird having to put together a very specialized set like that?
Weird isn't the right word. I think the right word is stressful. I get stressed over anything, but the particular misfortune gala, just because I just want it to be so well, go so well, and it's taking jokes and sort of in, like, let's say I usually do, let's say, half an hour, let's say. The jokes I'm doing for the gala are sort of pieces of the beginning, the middle, and the end, and now it's putting them all together and making sure they flow, and then you have to write a line that'll get you from point A to point B, and what if that line doesn't work, and all this stuff. So it's an amazing challenge, and I like it when Winnipeg does it because it makes you earn that 8 minutes, because it goes from... Because a lot of festivals, you do your best jokes. It's not necessarily a theme joke, it's your best jokes. But working within a theme, it's a big challenge because you're now seeing comedians having to write in a particular angle, in a particular way, all that sort of stuff.
You mentioned a couple performers that you're friends with and fans of that are playing at the festival. Is there anyone else performing that you might not have seen a lot of that you're looking forward to checking out while you're in Winnipeg?
The guy who put me... I haven't seen him in years, but the guy who put me on my very first weekend... And sort of really went to bat for me when I was a baby comedian, like 8 months in, and wet behind the ears, and wanted to be like, oh, we're going to tell some dick jokes with political tie-ins, was a guy named Mike Ward. And so I'm really excited to be, I think we're going to be in the same city for about 30 minutes. But go check him out. He's a very, very cool guy. He's an amazing comedian. He's a French comic who's sort of making a go at it in English, which is really, really brave, because French comedy is so big that he could just sort of sit on his laurels and not work. In English, but he said, you know what, this is the language it was created in, I'm gonna master that world too. So go check out Mike Ward. K. Trevor Wilson, who's on my gala, is fantastic. There's so many people. It's a really, really well-booked festival, and I'm saying that because they booked me and because it's true. They really have put together a great lineup of talent. Check it out. And Winnipeg, I think, is very lucky to have some of these guys, because it's a well balance of new acts that haven't done festivals before, myself, K. Trevor Wilson, and other acts that have been there before but are just still tearing houses down.
With all your success early on that I mentioned before, is there anything that really stands out for you thus far, like a favorite show or experience?
Two things. Winning the homegrown comedy competition and getting... the award's now named after Erwin Barker, who is from Winnipeg, who passed away last year. That was a huge moment for me because Erwin is a favorite son of Canadian comedy. Everyone loves him. He was probably one of the best and will be missed forever. And the idea that I was able to go and win something that was named after him just really spoke huge volumes for me. It was the only goal I had coming into comedy was to be in the homegrown comedy competition in Montreal. After Just for Laughs in the City, I started doing comedy, and then to win it was just absolutely gangbusters. And then I went to England in February, and that was an incredibly amazing experience because it taught me that, A, Canada is the best place to learn stand-up comedy. We have to do it in not always the best conditions, not always in conditions that would be right for comedy. Sometimes you're in a legion in Highland, Lowland, Ontario. There's a woman in a floral dress who's just called you gay through her toothless mouth, then you have to continue performing and not, like, scream at her, or you won't get paid. And so going to England, where it's such perfect conditions, just makes you appreciate the art, but also shows that that's how you should learn. You need to pay your dues. You don't want to you don't want to learn how to be a boxer in the best facilities, like in Rocky III. You want to learn how to be a boxer, like in Rocky I. In Canada, it's Rocky I. It's like you're always the underdog. People always have to prove yourself. And then going to England and showing that it does work, that you don't have to just do comedy in Canada. You can go anywhere and tell jokes, and it's applicable to those people's individual lives. Is an amazing accomplishment for me.
I guess it's kind of similar. They say that a lot about Canadian music and Canadian bands, that you kind of, because it's, you know, so cold half the year, you're just out there, you're playing, and you're kind of isolated from the rest of the world, and that's why the Canadian music scene seems to have a bit of a big push right now. So
yeah, well, I think what it all comes down to is it's cold and we need something to do. If it's January, you want to hear a band or you want to laugh. You don't want to just tan, because if you tried to tan in January, you would die. So you need to go and do something, and I think that's why. And I think it's also, I don't know what it is about Canadians, but we like to create, you know what I mean? We need to stimulate a part of our brain that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with work or anything like that, and it's now just sort of a nice feature.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I answered that last question, but I kept talking until you said maha, so I'm proud of that answer.
Finally, just for anyone around North America that's listening to this, because we have visitors from all over Canada and the U.S. That are looking to find out more from John Hastings, and I'm sure that's everyone that's listening right now.
Oh darn right, buddy. I'm going to be huge. I'm going to be like the next Gallagher 2. Not Gallagher, who's crazy, but his brother, who bought his act off of him. You can go to my website, johnhastingscomedy.com. My two podcasts are on there. Everything's on there. Or follow me on Twitter, Jay Hastings Comedy. And may I say, it's so bizarre that that's become the norm. We have to be like, follow this thing where I make pithy comments in 140 characters. But it's fun, and it makes me feel accomplished, because sometimes you're sitting in sweatpants talking to someone in Winnipeg over the internet, and you want to feel like you've done something for the day. So I threw up a joke. I'm constantly updating. So please, yeah, just check me out. Facebook, everything. I'm on all the silly things. I'm even on Friendster. It's just me and the guy who made Friendster, who's operating from a bunker.
Perfect. And I'm glad that we also now have a visual of you wearing sweatpants doing this interview.
Oh, no, I'm not wearing sweatpants now. It's 11 a.m., so I'm post sweatpants, and now I'm just into sort of it's like a lacy type underwear suit with a tank top. I'm going to go for a run. And that's how I like to do it, because I like to give the ladies an image of something horrific. You know what I mean? It's like in Fight Club. I like to destroy something beautiful. This interview is an odd left turn, but I like it. Showbizmonkeys.com.